watching Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. With me is Sharad Kutan. Let's continue our conversation about Malaysia's policy commitment in addressing the climate crisis. Alizan Mahdi is Director of Research at the Institute of Strategic and International Studies, Malaysia. Previously, he worked with the science advisor to the Prime Minister and the chair of the Intergovernmental Science Policy Platform on Biodiversity and Ecosystem Services. Alizan, good evening. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Now, I want to begin our conversation with getting your thoughts on what you made of that kerfuffle or controversy about Malaysia not being invited to the US Leaders Summit on Climate. What did you make of that?
Thank you. And first of all, good evening, and thank you for having me here tonight. I think, first of all, we must understand that the US Climate Summit is not part of the official international intergovernmental climate change process that is conducted through the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, or otherwise known as the UNFCCC, but rather is organized by one country as part of its own climate diplomacy initiative. So in this sense, I don't think it is really a major issue for any country really not to be invited, nor am I very surprised that Malaysia was not invited. Now, the reasons why Malaysia was not invited specifically, well, you would have to ask President Biden's administration for that. But from what we can gather, the invitations are based on a few criteria, of which are, firstly, as I'm made to understand, members of the Major Economies Forum on Energy and Climate Change are invited, and this consists of major economies that contribute to about 80% of the global carbon emissions, of which, of course, Malaysia is not part of. Secondly, countries that are especially vulnerable to climate change are also invited, and this is a major debate that we have been having, whether Malaysia is or not vulnerable to climate change, but I'm sure we can touch on that later. But I also must add here that countries that are obviously vulnerable to climate change, such as the Philippines, were also not invited to the summit. Thirdly, countries that are charting innovative pathways towards a net zero economy are also invited, and in this case, Malaysia has not set any targets for net zero carbon or emissions pathway. And finally, countries that demonstrate strong climate leadership, and of course, this is subjective, and this is up to the United States and Biden's administration to determine who is demonstrating strong climate leadership, but this can also be gathered by the country's nationally determined contributions, or the NDC. So my overall take is, it's not a major issue that Malaysia was not invited. Nonetheless, there may be an argument to be made that Malaysia is not seen as a strong climate, demonstrating strong climate leadership, and could be called towards action towards it. But
yeah,
really,
Alizan,
the key thing,
can you help us understand? I mean, if you were, as it were, the leader of the country, would you aspire for this? I mean, is that something you think at this point in time, considering both the political and economic and public health crisis, that we have the space to think of ourselves as a leader in this area? Our previous guest pointed out many of the achievements that were made by the Malaysian delegation to these global conversations. But today, is that the same? Could we just step back and let other countries lead, especially those in the region, Singapore, Vietnam, and Indonesia being the countries that were invited to the, or are going to be part of that US summit?
Yeah, it really depends on the priorities of the leadership, really. In one way, you can see that some climate action can be politically controversial. For example, if we were to have strong climate action, if we were to have carbon tax, for example, it will most likely be an unpopular move, especially to a few vested interests and especially to the private sector, which requires, especially in the time of COVID-19, it will require further additional tax. So in that sense, it may be a challenge. On the other hand, as we have seen from various efforts in terms of recovering from COVID-19, many countries are going for Green New Deals, etc., to build back better. And Malaysia, as a trading nation, could also demonstrate its leadership in demonstrating to our trading partners that Malaysia is ready, that Malaysia has the policies to comply with the higher standards that are required, especially in a post-COVID world. So I think it really depends on the priorities of.
Right. Are you seeing that, Alizan? I mean, I'm sure you're watching government policy very closely. Are you seeing Malaysia build back better and incorporating climate change responses into the recovery of the economy through our policies, through our plans, through our programs?
I think my answer for that is still waiting to see. At this moment, in my view, there hasn't been very strong response in terms of or clarity in terms of building back better and including incorporating climate change responses within our recovery. However, we just recently, a few days ago, there was the MyCAC, the Malaysian Climate Action Council, which actually highlighted that one of the pathways for Malaysia moving forward is to have a Green New Deal. So I think there is momentum. Recently, there has been a lot of announcements. There has been establishment of various institutional arrangements, such as the Climate Action Council, and there has been recent commitments towards incorporating climate change responses towards Build Back Better. So I would say let's wait and see. As well as going back to the first question, regarding the summit, I think the key thing here for Malaysia to show its leadership is it's not necessarily through the US Climate Summit, but it's actually through the official process, which is the UNFCCC, which we have the COP26 at the end of this year. And at this moment, Malaysia is reviewing its nationally determined contributions, NDC. So I think that is the platform where we really show whether we will demonstrate climate leadership.
Right. On a domestic front, you've written that Budget 21 had an explicit environmental sustainability focus, but you also noted that in terms of allocations, the allocations amounted to less than 1%, which doesn't compare favourably to maybe more developed nations. How do you square that? You know, a recognition, but then a lack of commitment, at least in financial terms, to these plans?
Yeah, okay. First of all, just to clarify as well, Malaysia does not have climate budget tagging. So what that means is climate change is, of course, a systemic issue. It's being addressed across various ministries and so on. So there are actually certain budget allocated across the various ministries, but because we do not have the climate budget tagging, we actually do not know the actual figure. So it may be more than 1%. My guess is it would be more than 1% if we did have the climate budget tagging.
However, I just get you to elaborate what climate budget tagging means and why don't we have it?
So essentially, it's just tagging which budget allocation is related to climate responses. So for example, we have within KPKT, the Ministry of Local Housing, we have programs such as Low Carbon City Framework, which is related to addressing climate change at the local level. And I'm not sure if this is incorporated within the budget allocated for the environment, for example. So if we tag all that budget that is relevant to climate change across the various ministries, it may be higher. Similar with, we have policies on EEV, efficient electrical vehicles. And again, I'm not sure if those are tagged with the environment allocation. So I think if we do have the climate budget tagging, it would actually help to see the bigger picture and see our responses in a more holistic way.
Right, Alizan, if I could ask you to help us understand something that you, again, you wrote about, and this was the Forest Plantation Development Loan Program. I think our previous guest also made reference to it. It says there's a revolving 500 million ringgit fund, but you say that in a strange way or in a paradoxical way, it might pose a threat to biodiversity and forest protection if not managed in a sustainable way. So could you help us understand some of these tensions within the budget allocations that are in fact there that seem to be tagged to environmental sustainability?
Sure. And of course, the key issue here is that forests and natural resources essentially is within the constitution under the jurisdiction of the states. And here, when we talk about forest plantations in the context of Malaysia, forest plantations can also be production forests as well as forest reserves. So in that sense. It depends the utilization of that forest. Well, if it's for production, it could be counterproductive towards sustainability, because it will also mean further deforestation, which means further land use change, which also means further increases of emissions from the land use change sector. So it really depends if it is managed in a sustainable manner or not.
Right. Very quickly, Alizan, in the minute or so that we have left, can I ask you, coming back to what you said about it all depends on the priorities of the leadership, right, the priorities of the government, where would you like to see more urgency come from the government in addressing the climate crisis specifically?
Okay, I think more, first of all, more generally, the key challenge with climate change I see in Malaysia is most of the efforts up to now has been quite piecemeal. It's been driven by one ministry, although those ministries have changed in recent years, but essentially it's driven by the Environment Ministry. And I think the announcement that we will be having a Green New Deal would help, but really we need a cross-cutting climate change policy that addresses various sectors. At the moment, we still have conflicting, again, priorities. For example, the automotive policy still pushes for producing more cars rather than moving towards public transport and so on. So I think it really needs to be a whole of government approach. That's first of all. But more specifically, I think when we look at Malaysia's climate change emissions, of course, the energy sector contributes to about 80% of Malaysia's carbon emissions. So ultimately, we cannot run away from moving towards decarbonizing our energy systems, moving towards renewable energy. And for that, we do have fairly ambitious targets to move towards about 31% renewable energy by 2025 and so on. So I think we cannot, you know, but it has to be very urgent. I think this is the key thing. We cannot move away from decarbonizing our energy systems. And finally, specifically as well, is in terms of climate change adaptation. Ultimately, Malaysia is blessed being a mega biodiverse country. We have tropical forests. I think this is our key identity in the context of internationally, really. So I think we really need to look into nature-based solutions, to preserving our forests.
Okay. Right. Alizan, thank you so much for speaking with us tonight. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
That's all we have for you on this episode of Consider This. Before we leave you, a quick reminder, don't forget to get all the latest news and information on COVID-19 vaccines at astroawani.com and the Astro Awani app. Thank you so much for watching. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan, signing off for the evening.
We will be back with you same time tomorrow. Till then,
good night.
Good night.